Thanks everybody for showing up. My name's Zach. I'm from Baylor University, and so I'll be talking about quantifying biochemical and energetic reservoirs in soil organic matter under fertilization and harvest techniques. And so the idea is we have generally, like, this is the carbon cycle, right? It's real simple, it's real neat, everybody loves it. But as we were talking about recently in the last two presentations, being able to quantify what defines soil health is kind of what we're looking into, at least in the research that we're doing at Baylor. So we've already kind of talked about various models to quantify the soil health, but the idea that soil organic matter is essential to that in terms of building structure and water retention. But more importantly, what we're looking at is more of like an energy source, both for plants and for microbial communities. So not only its role in kind of soil formation and what it does with that, but how it sustains life within the soil. So its food web, part of the food web, and how long that food web is, as well as that energetic supply. So in examining soil carbon dynamics, you know, we have these various inputs, so climate, soil type, plant type, management. These are just a few. And so for our particular research project, we are working at the KBS LTER site in Western Michigan. We were working on a half-Udal alfasol. My plant type was an upland switchgrass, Cavan rock. And what we were really focusing on was that management practice. So how does harvesting and fertilization begin to affect some of these soil carbon dynamics? So moving forward, we understand that these are going to affect this soil organic matter composition. So the three describers on the top are functional groups that we can use nuclear magnetic resonance to kind of tease out. And those are kind of the molecular composition of organic matter. Below that is the biomolecular composition of organic matter. So we can use the NMR with a molecular mixing model developed by Baldock to kind of get at the percentage of carbohydrates, lignins, lipids, proteins. And this is important because this is a little more useful for a landowner to look at, rather than say you have a lot of O-alkyl carbon in your soil. Say, like, you know, your soil organic matter is high in carbohydrates. So we use that, and what we were particularly looking at were light fraction organic matter, so using density separation, anything that was less than 1.8 grams per centimeter cubed, and also roots. So we did it to 60 centimeters for the roots. And so we understand that that soil organic matter composition is going to essentially affect both stability and soil energetics. So we talked about how organic matter is part of the food web, and also how we can look at it in terms of like a form of energy, but also a form of carbon storage, because I think that's something else that's important in terms of how are these organic matter components being used within the soil. Are they going to decompose quickly? Are they going to be used by the microbial community? So looking at things, proxies such as carbon and nitrogen or lignin and nitrogen to understand what's the decomposability there. And then the top one is alkyl to O-alkyl. That's using those functional groups to understand how the extent of decomposition. And then for soil energetics, we have the carbon oxidation state. So where is it along its oxidation pathway? How often has it been oxidized? And then this Gibbs free energy. So we can use kind of all these tools that we've developed for understanding soil organic matter composition to really get at what the Gibbs free energy is, kind of like the available energy to be used within the system. So we're looking at the biochemistry, the Gibbs free energy, and then I'll be talking a little bit about thermal analysis that we've kind of been throwing in there recently using thermogravimetric analysis with some of the engineering people at Baylor. So on the top, we have abundance on the y-axis, and along the x-axis would be essentially what you would look at if you were going to look at an NMR spectra. And it's going from 0 to 250 ppm, and it's just kind of showing you, sorry for the color situation, but on the left-hand side are the roots, on the right-hand side is the light fraction organic matter. And so this would essentially be a trace of what the NMR would show, and it's an average of both roots and light fraction organic matter. And mainly what you'll see there is that the roots have a larger O-alkyl component, and maybe less of an alkyl component. And so that's directly transferable into the molecular mixing model that we then put into this model to get the biomolecule concentration. So once again, you have your roots on the left, light fraction organic matter on the right, and you'll notice that roots had a larger percentage of carbohydrates than the light fraction organic matter. Light fraction organic matter had more lignin. And so for these, this is only for 0 to 5 and 5 to 15 centimeters. We didn't do the, 15 centimeters to 60 centimeter section because we didn't have enough sample within our to mix in. But it just kind of shows you what we're seeing here is essentially we think that a lot of this light fraction organic matter is already beginning to either be decomposed or it's just composed of more fibrous materials. So all those easily decomposable carbohydrates may have already been kind of going through that decomposition process. And so then what we do is we've already run carbon and nitrogen on those carbon and nitrogen stocks for each individual management treatment. And we multiply the biomolecular abundance times the carbon and nitrogen stocks to get biochemical root stocks and biochemical light fraction organic matter stocks. And so this just kind of gives you an idea of how those management practices play out in terms of the bigger picture. So on the top, you have biochemical root carbon stocks, and you have twice annual 196 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare and 0 kilograms of nitrogen, so a control group. And below that, you have an annual harvest with the 196 and the 0. Do you have my time, please?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. And so what we're seeing here is the annual harvest actually with the unfertilized has the largest amount of biochemical root carbon stocks. And so I'm sorry, the carbohydrates are the black, the proteins are going to be kind of this section here, and then you have lignin and lipids. So the main change between most of your management treatments is actually occurring within that carbohydrate. So at some point, because it's the largest part of the biomolecular composition, when you have increased carbon stocks, you're going to have increased carbohydrates. So thinking about this in terms of when you're talking to a land manager and they want to know, like, how quickly is this going to be reincorporated into the microbial communities and into my soil health assessments, things like this are what we're looking at. And then the same thing for the light fraction organic matter carbon stocks at the bottom. We have the annual high fertilization rate generally taking over at that point. And so from what I remember, the twice annual fertilization rate, the twice annual harvesting rate actually reduced overall carbon and nitrogen light fraction and roots. So just having a smaller carbon stock is going to affect those biochemical stocks. So getting on to those carbon oxidation states and the Gibbs free energy. Carbon oxidation state is kind of the available electrons used in stoichiometry, and we use that to tease out the Gibbs free energy, which I said is kind of like the available energy that's there to do work on. And so you can see the individual biomolecules and how they're separated on those sort of scalar methods there. And what we found is the root molarity, or like that, the individual assessment of energy for those stabilities is related to alkyl carbon. Alkyl carbon is related to your lipids, essentially. So we're finding that an increase in alkyl carbon is related to your increase in molar G, or the available energy within that organic matter. And so if it has more energy and it's more stable, then it's likely to stay around longer and hopefully be a long-term source of energy for organic matter. So then we looked at, once again, using the stocks of that available energy. So saying light fraction organic matter or roots have this particular type of or this amount of free energy, can we multiply that by the amount of carbon stocks, or the amount of light fraction of roots we have? And so this is for roots in particular. And so on the y-axis, you have the free energy stocks, kilojoules per meter squared. And then on the left chart, you have your harvest, annual harvested, unfertilized, annual fertilized, twice annually harvested, unfertilized, and then twice annually fertilized at the far end here. And so you have your 0 to 5, 5 to 15, 15 to 30, and 30 to 60 individual depths of those roots. And you can kind of see the energy distribution between each one of those depth sections for roots. And what we did on the chart on the right is you still have your Gibbs free energy stocks, but you have increasing stability moving from left to right using lignin carbon to total nitrogen. And so you're actually, what you're seeing there is also an increase in soil depth. So we have our 0 to 5, 5 to 15, 15 to 30, and 30 to 60. And so what we're seeing is the annual annually harvested, unfertilized, has generally more free energy, and it's kind of seen as like a, I guess, moving towards the origin axis of that plot. You're losing stability and you're losing energy. And so what we're seeing is, you know, as you increased your fertilization and your harvesting rate, you're reducing the amount of energy within your roots, and you're also reducing that stability. So this is something that we're kind of working through, but we're trying to look at this in terms of the food web and understand producer-controlled versus decomposer-controlled. So Gibbs free energy stocks on the left, and then on the bottom is that alkyl carbon to O-alkyl carbon. So that is kind of like when you have increased alkyl to O-alkyl carbon, alkyl is less easily decomposed. O-alkyl carbon is going to be more of your carbohydrates. And so if that value gets larger, you're having a larger extent of decomposition. And so what we're assuming, or what we're looking at here, is as you increase decomposition and you're losing that free energy, you're turning into more of a decomposer-controlled environment where you have low inputs with high decomposition. But when you're maybe starting at the beginning, or depending on what time of the season it is, you're having large inputs, low decomposition. So that's kind of the environment that we're trying to separate the energetics from, and understand how does management fall in between those when you're looking at the same plant and the same climate and those things. And this gets into the thermogravimetric analysis that we are doing. And so this is differential scanning calorimetry.
Yes.
Okay. No, maybe it's, this is TGA. I don't know if y'all are familiar, but it's XO1 and XO2. These are individual peaks. So we heat up organic matter at a very slow, I think it's 10 degrees C per minute, and understand how it's starting to break apart. Diane may have been speaking about this in terms of slowly increasing combustion, or what you're losing. And so we use a TGA curve to kind of normalize. So this is what we got. And then as you lose weight, you're going to increase the amount of original heat flow. And so what you lose before about 375 degrees is considered more labile material. And then above that is considered more stable material if it's going to decompose at a higher temperature or combust at a higher temperature. And so we can use those as the total area under the curve as what your energy content is. We also used an isothermal analysis. And what this essentially does is it heats up to 250 degrees, holds it for an hour, then heats it up to 300 degrees, holds it for an hour. And we can use the amount of weight lost at those individual thermal isothermal units to look at, to eventually get at a decay rate. So the value on the left is annual are the first four, twice annual are the second four, and it's going for 0 to 5, 5 to 15, unfertilized, and then fertilized is here. And what we saw essentially was the annual had a larger of that XO2, so that thermally stable material, And then when we got into the decay rate, I wanted to show you how each isothermal unit had its own decay rate. We would follow that down to kind of look at the natural log of that decay rate over 1 over the gas constant times the temperature. And we would use that to find the activation energy, which we did here, for each individual depth, for light fraction organic matter. And we used it to try to find this return on investment parameter for short to medium term biodegradability. We didn't really find anything great, but I think it's a great opportunity to kind of look at organic matter in a different way. So with that, I'll leave it be.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.